Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, co-host, and with me today will be David Holly. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup. And in this episode, we're going to be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Sheffield Wednesday at Craven Cottage. But before that, we'll be discussing some transfer speculation, along with questions from you, the Fulham supporters. We have much to discuss, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my Cottage Talk co-host back to the show. David, how you doing? It's been a while. How are you doing?
Yeah, I know. It's been a terrible long time, hasn't it? You know what? I kind of switched off from Fulham completely, even in our recent renaissance. You know, our friend Scott Tanfield, he sent me a message, I think, last week saying, are you going to the Sheffield Wednesday match? And I thought, well, that's a bit random. But I said, well, yeah. I said, if it's a home game, I will be probably, of course, yeah. And I said to him, when is it? I just completely zoned out of Fulham for a bit, and I didn't even realise until I then looked it up that that's our next game.
Yeah.
That's how sort of, you know, switched off from it I'd been. But, you know, I'd gone from kind of being switched off because I'd reached a low point with Fulham the way we were going again. It looked like another season to be written off. And then suddenly we turned the corner, you know, and we've had a great couple of matches. And let's just hope that obviously the momentum can like continue again now after this break. I hope it's not going to be detrimental to our progress, but no, it's been ages, and it does seem like a long, long time since I last did Cottage Talk with you guys.
It has been a while, David, and what's interesting is that, you know, I did this last show with Emilio and Mike, and we were looking back and trying to figure out, when did it turn? When did our fortune change, or how did it change? Well, I'm talking about the last two matches that over the span of these two last international breaks, you know, looking at it as a whole, but these last two matches really have changed our fortune. So I'm going to ask you as a way just to start the show, where do you think it all changed for us?
I gave a clue to myself when I last did the show. I said I last did the show with you guys because, of course, it was with me, you, and Guy, wasn't it? So I remember that now. That was the last time.
We
did it. We had to get a Guy joke in there. Oh, for me, obviously, the Huddersfield was a big turning point. And, you know, as I've said to you guys and Guy probably as well and everyone else. Actually, I did do the show, the Huddersfield show, I think, didn't I? It was the realisation at last of getting his sort of people in the right places. You know, Aluku is not a central striker, but
right.
As a wide man on either flank, he causes a lot of danger. And that meant that Tom Kearney was allowed to play in the middle where we've been saying that he should play. So that was part of it. It was also, I think, he's kind of stumbled across a formation, I think, where he found that he didn't have to play both McDonald and Parker, allowing us to play, you know, a more attacking central midfielder, allowing Johansson to play there. Finding that Piazon isn't a striker as such, maybe, but does a great job as a sort of a wide midfielder come kind of, you know, second or third striker. It was just this sort of, just all the pieces came together. But also, you know, the other very important thing was, you know, the reintroduction of Thomas Callas. And I think to a certain point, Ryan Fredericks as well. Look at that. Look at suddenly how things have tightened up at the back, how much tighter we've been with Callas coming back. What a difference it's made. So it's all those kind of little pieces of the jigsaw fitted together. You know, getting Aluku out wide, getting Kearney central. It's all helped people like Chris Martin. He's come on leaps and bounds as well. Callas back in the team. Even, you know, my old friend Scott Malone, turning some great performances. You know,
yes.
We look at, you know, Cardiff City, we're almost glad to get rid of him as much as we were Richards. And, you know, at the moment, we've shafted them, you know, we really have. I mean,
I totally agree there, David.
You know, we've had by far the better side of the deal from what I can see. Let's hope, you know, we can just carry on with this tomorrow because it just the pieces came together at last. We had, you know, lots of frustration because we have many players who are technically talented or, you know, they have pace or they have some attribute. It just wasn't quite fitting together, but suddenly it has the last couple of games. And let's hope that it just can continue and we can carry on to use that to unlock teams, use our pace, use our guile, and put teams on the back foot. And when you put, you know, goals past other teams, they're on the back foot and they have to change their game plan. You know,
yep.
Brentford wasn't comfortable, Brentford, but really, you know, we was in control.
And we were,
like anything,
David.
You know, Huddersfield, their game plan was wrecked because of what we did, and they had to
change
it. And that's what we need to be doing tomorrow.
You know, it's very interesting. Like I told you off air, I'm going to be reading some comments from a writer who covers Sheffield Wednesday, and I think you're going to find it a little bit revealing. We're going to be doing that a little bit later as part of our preview. But yes, I agree with you. We need to be doing the same thing we've done the last two matches and just continue. And like you said, things have changed around, players moving in different positions. I think you pretty much nailed what's going on. We've already been talking about it, but I wanted to give you your chance to chime in as well. All right, David, before we get into previewing the match, I do have a little bit of transfer speculation. I want to start here. You know, I saw this earlier in this week. It had Fulham, actually. Speculation had Fulham linked to a defensive midfielder, which I found interesting. So what are your thoughts of Fulham potentially being interested in defensive midfielder Alfred Ndai from Villarreal? I'm more interested in the speculation being a defensive midfielder. What are your thoughts about this in general?
It's a bit strange because you kind of get to this position now where we are, as I just described, where the pieces are kind of fitting together.
Right.
And it's working. And we have McDonald's kind of got that role, but it's kind of an interchangeable role where Parker could probably play there as well and do a similar job. He's probably a similar kind of player. And then we've got other people, of course, who haven't even been making the 18 frequently. Tunnicliffe could play there maybe. LVC, certainly a central midfield, maybe not as defensive as that. So you wonder really what's the rationale behind that. Is there any truth in it?
Right.
You know, is this something that's born about from previously when things weren't working? Or is this, you know, are they still looking for players now things are starting to work? Because I wouldn't think that was the position that was of most demand if we were looking to, you know, enhance the squad further. It's hard to really to say where you would enhance the squad further, but I suppose the obvious one would be if Chris Martin isn't available or injured or whatever else, there is no one there who can kind of play that role really that he does. Yes, Smith can come in. Yes, Woodrow can come in, but neither of them have his attributes. So I would have thought Chris Martin at the moment is now, you know, he's almost guaranteed a place because he's unique in what he does. And it
sure
started to work for him playing that lone striker role again with the kind of, you know, two people around him perhaps supporting. So as defensive midfielder, I can't see it myself really. I don't know the guy. I don't know how good he is, how much better he is than anyone we have. But it's a bit surprising. I wouldn't think we'd be looking to buy too many more midfielders at the moment.
Yeah, it was interesting. Again, this is coming from over there, not coming from our end. And listen, it's speculation. And, you know, I was trying to read between the lines. What it looked like to me is that his team is looking to offload him and looking for teams that might be interested in. And, you know, again, Fulham were linked to him in this article, but who knows? You know, again, it's speculation, but it's always fun to talk about. And that's going to lead me to talk about something that actually got me a little bit excited, but I have to remember it's just speculation, David. What are your thoughts of Fulham potentially being linked to midfielder Karim Fry? I was a big fan of Karim Fry. There was some speculation this week. It's not just Fulham. There have been some other teams as well in the Premier League. But I saw a piece of speculation linking Fulham to Karim Fry. What are your thoughts on that?
Again, surprise, really. You know, Fry, excuse me, he showed a lot of promise. But, you know, and there was myself and all the other people who have, like, got a cynical edge to our side. We sort of felt that I think he was a bit of a one-trick pony. You know, all he ever used to do was kind of play that role on the left and cut in on his right foot the whole time. And when you compare perhaps what someone like Aluku's been doing in the last few games, I don't think it's comparable. If Aluku can carry on doing what he does, you know, taking people on the outside and cutting inside, why would you want a player that can only cut inside, can only go one way, when you've got a player that can go two? Aluku's shown on both flanks. He's beating people on the outside and he's cut inside. Okay, his final shooting isn't very good, perhaps, sometimes. You know, I was very surprised that he won the Player of the Month award, much as he's been, you know, a part of the team that have done well the last couple of games. But his shooting has also been a bit awful, as we saw against QPR as well. But Fry, I don't see Fry at the moment as being someone who would be an upgrade on what we have, believe it or not. I know he was popular and we were a Premier League team then, so you would think perhaps he's good, but he never really had a successful run for us. and certainly, you know, had this kind of tag, maybe unfairly, I don't know, of being a one-trick pony. So I know there's kind of a sentiment, a reason to get old players back, but it rarely works, does it, really? You know, getting someone back.
No, you're right, David.
Who was a star, you know, Clinton Dempsey coming back. It was he never really shone like he had when he was there.
Yeah, that didn't work.
Previously, you know.
That didn't work.
It often doesn't work, you know, it's a sentimental move rather than maybe a shrewd business move. So
good point.
I'm not sure what attributes that he has that our friend Calvin Klein, the stat man, decides that, you know, is worth bringing him back. But I'd say, you know, like Calvin Klein, it could be pants.
Very good there, my friend. Yeah, listen, I mean, I was just thinking back because I was a fan of his. I wanted to see him make it before him, but you bring up a great point. Where does he fit? Because he just cuts inside. We know that of him, and he's probably not the right fit. And like I mentioned, there are other teams linked to him too. So I don't take this one seriously, but it's always fun to talk a little transfer speculation. That's going to lead me to talk about one piece of speculation that I have myself, David, which I found interesting when I was messaged this. This is from a source of mine. Okay, this is someone that I know. According to a source of mine, Fulham are taking up the option to buy Chris Martin. The cost, including the loan fee, is £9 million, my source has told me. David, what are your thoughts on this? Again, this is speculation, but this is someone that I trust. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's a lot of money. I have to say, it is a lot of money. You know, we paid, you know, less than that, supposedly, for McCormack, I think, who was... you know, arguably maybe more all-round player, someone who could score the goals, who has scored lots of goals and also created. But, you know, it is a lot of money. But I have to say that, you know, finding the right person who can do that is worth its weight in gold as well.
That's
and
right.
If you've got someone in the team who can score you the goals, you know, sometimes you have to pay the money for them. And Chris Martin has shown, certainly, after a slow start, I think we'd all agree, he's shown, you know, the reasons why he is quite highly sought after and why, you know, hopefully it was the right move to go for him, because his link-up play is pretty good. He does play the lone role pretty well. You know, he can score with his head. He can score with his feet. He's got reasonable pace. He's got, you know, he's got a little bit of everything that you want from a striker. He's, you know, maybe he's not quite got Smith's aerial ability, but he's not bad in the air. He's obviously a lot better on the ground than Smith. Now, you know, he's got attributes like McCormack, but is less, perhaps, less tempestuous, let's say. Doesn't go into a sulk about it, I think. He'll throw himself to the floor. You know, he's got a reasonable turn of pace as well. He chases, you know, down lost causes pretty well. So, you know, at the moment, he's the best we have by far. And if he's part of a team that are doing well, then don't disrupt the team. And within reason, you know, pay what you need to pay to keep him.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it, David, and I'm glad that you brought up McCormack. And McCormack did a job for us, let's be honest here. He's a different type of striker. The one thing that I like about Chris Martin, and I think you're going to agree with me on this, he actually brings his teammates into the game. I'm not saying that McCormack didn't. I just think that he likes to get everyone involved, and his strength is partially his assist, not just scoring goals. So I like him as a complete team player. It's not all about the goals with this guy. It's about scoring goals, and it doesn't necessarily have to be him. And when you have a guy like this, you lock him up. So if this is true, what I've been told, I'm very happy, David. I would be very happy if this is true.
Yeah, well, we have the option to buy, apparently. So
yeah.
I think if he's impressing the powers that be and Calvin Klein as well, then they're going to buy it to pay the money for it, exercise the option, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, David, let's move on. Let's now answer some questions from the Fulham supporters, and some of them are transfer speculation related. I put this on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. We have a few for Ask the Co-host. So let's start here. Dean Rozier put this in here, and I'll give it to you. Here's his topic. It is clear we have a very decent side this season. Yet Rigg and Klein have come in for criticism in the past for their say on transfers, etc. Do you both feel this is justified when you look at our position in the league and our team looking better than it has in 4 to 5 years. David, what are your thoughts about that?
That's a very interesting debate because, you know, Mike Rigg has had a lot of stick. And Klein, you know, I think Klein's had a lot of stick because of what's been said about him, not because of anything that necessarily he's done or he hasn't done. He's, you know, I wouldn't know who he was if I bumped into him at Motspur Park Station in the morning, you know. He's probably walks past me sometimes and I have no idea who he is. Rigg obviously is a bit more of a public figure. He has come out and said things. He's made, you know, appearances occasionally on the Fulham website. And so we know what he looks like a bit. We know what he sounds like. And, you know, he's been there for, you know, let's look at his tenure. Probably 3/4 of his tenure has been a load of rubbish. Maybe even a higher percentage. It's only the last little bit when things have turned the corner. And, you know, I know our friend and co-host, Mike Gregg, he's actually, you know, he has conversations with him sometimes when he sees him at meetings or matches or something. And I think, you know, Mike believes that he's, you know, he's doing his best. He's got a difficult job. And again, he's another part of this jigsaw, that, you know, mysterious jigsaw. We don't really know who pulls all the strings, what Ali Mack does, what Craig Klein does, what, you know, who Slavish does even sometimes, who actually has a final say on this and that. But I think, obviously, you know, using my old maxim, the table doesn't lie. For most of the time, you've got every right to criticise these guys because it wasn't working. But again, the table doesn't lie at the moment, and things are working at present or getting better. So certainly, I tend to agree with what Dean is saying, that the last few years we certainly, you know, we were rubbish when we were in the Premier League. We deserve to be relegated. Our first two seasons of the Championship have been pretty shambolic as well. So yeah, I mean, certainly for 2 or 3 years, we now are showing our first signs of being on the up again. I think that's. I don't want to go overboard and say, yeah, we've got there, because we don't know what's going to happen. We might be rubbish tomorrow. You know, the wheels might fall off again. The international break disrupts us. Who knows? But certainly we've shown, not just in the matches that we've won, but the way we've won them, we've played with pace and passion and things. And that's what we have been lacking. So, you know, I think potentially credit could be coming in the way of Klein and Rigg and maybe others. But let's not go overboard. Let's, you know, be measured about it and see, you know, if we can continue. You know, we need consistency. It's not just about 2 good games. We need to put together a run, really. We can't expect to win every game, obviously. And if we have the odd setback, so be it. But, you know, it's got to be 2 steps forward and 1 step back, consistently at least. You know, hopefully better than that. You know, and then these guys will earn the praise that I think they get. I mean, you know, we've had it in the past. There's people who've come to Fulham, and, you know, players and managers who've been criticised at the start, and they've turned things around. Mick Conroy was one. As a striker, he got a lot of stick. Next season, he scored 15 goals. He won promotion. That's a long time, you know, before you were there. Obviously, Chris Baird is a more recent example. Got a lot of stick in his early days with Fulham. Turned around to be a Fulham favourite. Perhaps, potentially, he was another one who came back for a second go at Fulham, and it didn't really, you know, materialise really much there. But you know, to talk about these things, there are players and managers and coaches who come to Fulham, and at first, you know, things weren't looking too positive, but they've turned it around. So, you know, if we carry on moving forwards, everyone will suddenly say, oh, how wonderful, you know, it is. We've got, at last, Shahid Khan has got the right team and the right structure together, and we can take this club forward.
David, I think you did a really nice job of analysing the situation. Listen, I understand the criticism prior, because it has been so bad, and you didn't see a light at the end of the tunnel. And we are seeing improvement. You're right about that. It does look much better than it was in the prior seasons. I see that, and I could see it building towards something. But I think we still need to see this whole thing play out. I think they deserve, you know, some praise for it so far. But to really judge it, we have to see the entire season play itself out to see. That's the way I look at it. But right now, it certainly looks better. I can give them praise for changing it from what it has been in the past. But let's see exactly how good it can be before we really give them that type of praise of say, listen, they've done a great job here. Let's hold off on that yet. Yeah, let's see how it all works out. I think they've given Jokanović the right players, but only time will tell. So I still want to see it play out, David. I see where you're going on this. You know, like you said, it's at times it could be one step forward, two steps back, one step forward. You know, we can keep doing that. Let's see if it becomes consistent. And then then the praise is certainly warranted. They will deserve it if this thing heads in the right direction, which we all hope it does. So I'm with you, David, on this. But just to go off on this a little bit, because, you know, I think these guys also are part of trying to build some kind of nucleus. And I said this to the guys on the last show. David, I think we finally have an identity. Whether it transforms to us being in the top six, I think under Jokanović, we have finally built an identity. Would you agree with that?
Well, we have the fledgling. We have an embryonic identity, yeah? Because we still don't know what the bigger picture is, maybe with other people. You know, we've got players who've been brought in who haven't figured much recently. You know, Yozabed and Cabanel and other people, you know. And like I say, like LVC and Tunnicky for now sort of pushed out on the periphery and things. Even Odoi isn't in the team now, and Sessegnon was a regular, and now Malone seems to kind of, you know, made the position his own. So we're still in a very early stages of a renaissance, perhaps, as hopefully it's a renaissance anyway. And whether, you know, this team that, you know, has suddenly come together by luck or by judgment, I'm sure Jokanović would say this is what he's been building for, but, you know, it's funny that he didn't get it right with the same players beforehand, but nevertheless, you know, he's getting there. But can they keep the consistency, or will other teams work out, you know, how to counter us? Right. Will they play a different style and, you know, cause us problems? So let's see how it all pans out. Certainly, it's looking more positive because at last we're creating chances. We're getting wide. We're using pace. You know, we're closing people down. We're looking sort of like we want to win the game. We're up for it. And, you know, people like Johansson, he's constant running, ably assisted by the others who do the same thing. So let's see what happens. Tomorrow is the first time chance to see. If we can pick up where we left off tomorrow, then, you know, it's a very, very good start, isn't it?
Yes, David, certainly. And I'm here to tell you that the next two matches are going to be very interesting to really gauge if we can build upon what we have done. I want to say this in between these last two international breaks, because you are playing two teams with two completely different styles. We'll be talking about Sheffield Wednesday, who, believe it or not, are very similar to us. I know they play a 4-4-2, but I'm just talking about where they are, the way they're built. There are some similarities here, so it's going to be interesting how this match is going to play out. And when I share the stats with you, you're going to agree with me on that, because the stats are very similar between the two clubs. That's an interesting one. Then you face Brighton, who have a completely different style. So I think we can learn something in these next two matches. But going back to Dean's point, Dean, I'll be the first to raise my hand if we see a consistent form and say, you know what, they've done a really good job building this team. I just want to give it a little bit more time to really see this thing play out. And then we can judge it. You know, we can judge it right now and say, you know what, so far so good. But to really fully judge it, we need to see, you know, we're just in a chapter. We need to see the full movie, and we haven't seen it, or the full book. We haven't seen it yet. So we just need to see it play out a little bit more. That's where I'm going on this. All right, David, here's another question from Mr. High Noon himself, Gary Cooper. You ready?
Yeah.
Here it is. A lot of talk about people coming in linked with midfield. Are we not strong enough there? Surely a forward should be a top priority, no? In case Martin gets injured, we could struggle. David, you were just talking about Chris Martin. Thoughts on what Gary had to share here?
Well, if Gary's High Noon, I'm, you know, 11:30, because I was there before you, Gary, on this one, I'm afraid. I've kind of already answered your question, I think, in the last one.
You did.
I don't want to, you know, let's not waste too much time. And obviously, I like to answer every question fully as possible, but I've basically said the same thing. You know, why look at midfielders where we seem to be like heavily loaded? And yep. Chris Martin at the moment is the person that we suffer from most if he goes down. I think, well, obviously you could say Thomas Kalas as well, maybe, as we've seen. But Chris Martin is the only person really who can, you know, is a viable striking option. Matt Smith isn't really going to give you, you know, the fullness of the game that we need. Corley isn't as well, and I don't think anyone else can. I mean, after that, you start playing a youngster or one of the guys out of position. So yeah, I'm with Gary on this one, or Gary's with me, whichever. Whoever thought of it first, this is the one. I think, you know, we know, and it's a difficult thing. Do you buy an expensive striker as a backup? No, you can't. That's another thing. You know, you can't buy a great striker and sit him on the bench. So it's finding that balance, isn't it? So
yes.
But certainly a striker is more of a priority to me than a midfielder at the moment.
Yeah, listen, I completely agree with both of you. In fact, I went on the championship roundtable and I was asked that question in the January transfer window. What do you want Fulham to do? And I said, bring in another striker. And I couldn't agree with you guys more. I think they needed potentially a different type of striker. I'm going to share this with you, David, and everyone listening. Again, I can't give any details, but I will just tell you that I was messaged from another source telling me that Fulham are linked to a striker. That's all I'm going to say. I was given a name. I'm not at liberty to say the name. I'm just saying that there's a link with Fulham to a striker, so maybe they are looking into a striker. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I can say. So, and my hope is that they do bring in a striker in the January transfer window. So when I heard that, I was encouraged. Again, it's just speculation, someone letting me know this. But we'll see if something comes through with that. And that's that on that question, David. All right. Here's an interesting one. This is from Gegzo, and I think you're going to get a chuckle out of this, David. Do you think we're looking more like Barca with each passing week?
I haven't seen Barca play, so I can't comment, I'm afraid. Sorry.
The one thing that I will say, David, and Mike said it on the last show, and actually someone said this to me as well. A couple of people said this to me, and I heard it on a Brentford podcast, comparing us to Watford. I do see that comparison, David. Do you see that?
I haven't seen Watford play recently either. So.
Watford with Jokanović. I'm sorry.
I remember when we got stuffed by Watford at home.
That was bad.
That live match on the TV, I think, wasn't it? And we was about 15 down after 10 minutes and didn't. Whoever got sent off, Bettinelli got sent off as well, didn't he, as well, yeah? Yeah, I do remember them being, you know, quick and strong and everything. And that's what, you know, what the Championship's about. We've always said that from day one. You need, you know, it's a tough league. You have strong, quick players against you. It's not, you know, for fanning around and passing it 15 times, you know, to yourself in midfield. It's being, you know, more direct and everything, finding ways to unlock other teams getting behind them. And we started to do that now. So, yeah, I mean, I think Barca is quite a, you know, I assume we're not as good as Barca yet, but I mean, you know, Barca are one of these teams that have a ridiculously high percentage rate of play normally, if you remember. They have very high possessions, if I'm, you know, thinking the right thing. And that's not what we want, because we've had the high possession without the end product. You know, now we're getting matches, and, you know, the Huddersfield match, remember, the stats were even, but
that's
the match
right.
was not even. You know, so it's all very well having possession, but you know, we've been much more fruitful with our possession. We've had less possession as a percentage in the last couple of games, but we've done much more with it. So, you know, if Barcelona is still the team of, you know, very slow, patient build-up with lots of possession and then the odd killer ball, then that's not really us at the moment, is it, I don't think?
No, it's actually transformed and David, I said this to Mike on the last show. I want to get your thoughts on it since we're talking about possession. Then we'll get into previewing this match. I said to him, I asked him, I said, do you think that the possession numbers have gone down because we do not have Parker and McDonald playing together, and them together slowed things down? Now you take Parker out of the mix. Nothing against Scott Parker, but I think without one of them, and you now have Johansson playing his role, I think things have changed. I think the way that their buildup has completely changed, and it's okay that the possession numbers have gone down. But I think part of that is with Parker not being in there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a shame because, you know, I thought Parker was almost indispensable a few weeks
That's
ago.
That's right.
And yeah. So I'm not right on that one, you see. I thought, how are we going to – I just couldn't see how we would manage without him. But I didn't realize what an asset, you know, Johansson was, because – you know, he had a very, you know, again, a very inauspicious start to his Fulham career. He came on, he was taken off after about 30 minutes for no particular good reason. We never got to see what he could do. But, you know, when you realise that he's an all-action midfielder who charges people down and wins the ball and, you know, is up there chasing the goalkeeper as well and gets around, and he's got, you know, better legs and better movement than Parker when he's younger, suddenly we realised, you know, that perhaps there is life after Parker after all. And certainly, you know, me, Mike and others were saying the problem that we had early on in the season was that Parker and McDonald were too much of a muchness. You know, you're taking two out of ten places. A fifth of your whole team was taken up by, you know, two people. You know, half of your midfield had two people in it who were basically the same kind of player.
And it that's just, right.
You know, we were just not, you know, we needed something different in there, and that's what we've got now. So yeah, I mean, I hope Parker still figures, and I think there's a role for him.
Well, I'm sure
he will. Either to alternate with McDonald if McDonald's not available, or you know, whatever, or to come on for the last, you know, so and so, you know, an old head to kind of, you know, tie things down if you need to tie things down or whatever, or as a change to provide fresher legs, so be it. But yeah, it's definitely working better as it is now.
Yeah, and listen, this isn't a slight on Scott Parker, because I think Scott Parker still has a significant role on Fulham. Like you said, David, I could see times where they rotate. You know, there might be matches where Parker's going to start, and I'd be fine with that. I just think starting them together is too much. I think it's, like you said, it's two of the same, and I think it's stifled us a little bit. So now you've taken that out, and you have someone that's more aggressive, more forward-thinking with Stefan Johansson. I think it's made a difference. Even though the possession numbers have gone down, it's what we're doing with the possession that has been more valuable. And I think, you know, I think that's important to note. So, okay, so very good there. All right, David, let's now transition. Let's now preview this match, and we're going to do this piece by piece. Let's start with some info from WhoScored.com to get us going. And I'm just going to this is just a comparison. We're going to start with a comparison, the stats comparison between Sheffield Wednesday and Fulham. I want to get your thoughts on that, and then I'll share some characteristics right after that. But let's start with just some stats, because I find them interesting. Okay, let's start with possession. Fulham are currently second in the league, David. This is according to WhoScored.com with 56.8. Sheffield Wednesday are third, David, 55.3. Aerials won. Fulham are 24th in the league, 14.4. And Sheffield Wednesday are 20th with 18.8. Shots. Fulham are third with 14.4. Sheffield Wednesday are third. I'm sorry. Fulham are third and Sheffield Wednesday are fourth with 14.2. Passing success, Fulham are first in the league, 83. Sheffield Wednesday are tied for third with 80.2, David. Crosses per game, Fulham are tied for second at 22, and Sheffield Wednesday are tied for sixth with 21. Through balls, Fulham are first in the league with 3 per game, and right now Sheffield Wednesday are tied for third with 1 per game. Long balls, Fulham are 22nd with 70. And Sheffield Wednesday are 12th with 80. Short passes, Fulham now still first in the league with 477. Sheffield Wednesday are third, David, with 422. Okay, these stats are very similar. Is that what you're getting out of this, David, as I am?
It was actually. You deprived me of a joke as well earlier, but never mind. It was I could call it a Goldman, but it was an accidental Goldman, you know.
Okay.
I saw our friend Anthea to put a question in as well about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I was just going to say, are we turning into a show about the West with Gary Cooper and High Noon and Anthea and her spaghetti Western trilogies or whatever? But you deprived me of that, so I won't hold it against you, Russ, anyway.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
Sorry, Anthea, we didn't get to do your question properly. Anyway, back to your question. Yeah, I mean, the big thing there is how similar we are, you know, on stats anyway, and I mean, whether we play like that, who knows? But yeah, we are in every criteria, literally in the same ballpark, you know, in terms of, you know, you look at it, shots, through balls, possession, aerial duels, or, you know, balls won in the air, you know, short balls, long balls, et cetera, et cetera. So again, I suppose it's not then, you know, it's not sort of ridiculous to see why we are in a similar part of the table as well, I guess, you know, because we are two similar teams on paper at the moment. So we could be looking for a big matchup tomorrow. You know, whose style will come out the better? It's going to be very interesting to see how, you know, Sheffield Wednesday probably have a, you know, have a good following tomorrow. They're quite a, they have quite a good fan base, I think,
and a
vocal support. So, you know, they won't be coming to London just to sit there and try and snatch a point. They'll be coming for all 3 points, I'm sure. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. But yeah, I mean, that's the most light for light kind of matchup we've had in a long time that I can remember.
David, I agree with that. That's why I wanted to start off talking about that, because when you look at the stats, they are so similar. And now I'm going to share some more information from whoscored.com so we can learn a little bit more about Sheffield Wednesday. And like I mentioned, after that, I'm going to share some information from Louis Shackshaft, who writes for a shoot about Sheffield Wednesday. And I think you're going to find what he has to share very interesting. But let's start here first. Let's look at the table last year, because this is also a good barometer. And Louis was the one that told me this when I did the championship table. I was not aware of this. But after 16 games last year, we are now at 16 games now. Sheffield Wednesday were ninth with 24 points, David. 24 points last year at this time, they were ninth. So just keep that in mind. This season, right now, Fulham are currently eighth. 6 wins, 6 draws, 4 losses. We've scored 23. We've given up 18. We're on a goal differential of +5, which is decent. And we're on 24 points. Sheffield Wednesday, they are currently 10th. 7 victories, 3 draws, 6 losses. They've only scored 17. They've given up 1 more than us, 19. They're on a -2 goal differential. And David, they're also on 24 points. They're on the same total of points that they were 1 year ago. Very interesting. Now I'm going to give you some information from whoscored.com on characteristics of Sheffield Wednesday. Strengths, very strong. Coming back from losing positions, protecting the lead, they're strong. Their weaknesses, finishing scoring chances, stopping opponents from creating chances, aerial duels, and defending against skillful players. Sheffield Wednesday style, attack through the middle, possession football, short passes, non-aggressive, rotate their first 11. That is true. And they play a 4-4-2. Before we go on any further, David, what are your thoughts about that information I just shared with you?
Well, you know, it's you know, the thing that I suppose rings alarm bells is they're sort of, you know, good at coming back from losing positions.
Yep.
You know, sort of strong defending leads, you said, didn't you, I think? So, you know, we don't want, you know, even if we get our noses in front, we shouldn't take you know, too much for granted. Because, you know, they're good at coming back from that, you know, sort of positions. Obviously, if we can do what we did against Huddersfield, I think, you know, not many teams would have come back from that. But, you know, one goal, you know, don't think we'd be happy to be ahead by one goal if we can get our noses in front. We need to make it convincing again. You know, we need to make them, as I said before at the start of the show, change their game plan, completely disrupt their style. Because, you know, one goal lead, very slender lead against a team that are good at coming back. Is you know, a dangerous scenario. But the one thing that I do take positiveness from is that you know, our goal difference is better than theirs. So, you know, we've you know, got a good positive one there, and they've got a negative one. And you know, and the season is still, you know, relatively young. It's good to be, you know, in that situation, that so we're doing something better than they are.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because when I spoke to Louis on the championship roundtable, his team was just coming off 2 losses. And this is, as he said, the first time when he's been on this show that he's been not has been positive. And I guess it's been building. And I'm, you know, and again, you're going to hear that in some of his answers to me, because, you know, I have much respect for Sheffield Wednesday. You know, I watched a good amount of video and talking to Louis. I have much respect for what they've built. But what I'm about to share is interesting, because you're going to hear some of the frustrations that he's had with them so far this season. But again, this is a very dangerous team. Let me stress this, even though I'm going to be sharing what Louis has to share here. This is a dangerous team that's very similar to Fulham. Not, they play 4-4-2, but they are similar in so many different categories. Like you said, just stats. So let me just now share some information with you, David. First thing I asked Louis, share with us about Sheffield Wednesday's season so far this season, and have you noticed any changes to the team from last season? Here is Louis Shackshaft's answer. This is, again, a writer for Shoot, who covers Sheffield Wednesday. He said this: to be brutally honest, Sheffield Wednesday's season so far has been average. I expected them to have more points on the board at this stage. The biggest change for me from last season is that we have seen to have lost the togetherness. It has been a shame. Glenn Louvins has been injured for the best part of the season. Him and Tom Lees formed a great center back pairing last season. I think we are currently missing his leadership at the back. Our defense last season was rock solid. The campaign seems a little wayward. And then I just asked him this question, then you and I can discuss. I had asked you on the championship roundtable that I was surprised that Ross Wallace has been recently dropped. Talked about what has been going on with him this season, along with Barry Bannon and Fernando Forestieri. Here's his answer. Ultimately, Bannon and Forestieri are not showing their full potential in most games this season. They've been good in parts, but on paper, they are probably two of the most influential players in our squad. When those two are not at the races, we seem to be falling short. Bannon should be played through the middle and not on the wing as he has been. Forestieri can play either on the left or up front, but has found himself on the bench to either make way for Fletcher or Reach. As for Ross Wallace, he has become a bit part player mainly due to the arrival of Adam Reach and Almin Abdi fitting into our rotation policy. For me, this is a shame because I believe Wallace still has a lot to offer. He can be a game changer, as proven at the Cottage last season. David, that's why I brought up that question to Louis, because I was surprised to learn that Ross Wallace had been dropped recently. So I've given you a good amount of information. What do you take from what Louis Shackshaft had to share here?
It's funny, there's, you know, some of the things echo the stuff we kind of say, that, you know, Tom Kenny's got to play in the middle, not
exactly.
Wide.
Exactly.
Things like that. That was the kind of thing that that struck out to me. And then, you know, and so and so needs to play up front on the left, but he's on the bench. And I know. And yeah, it's kind of, you know, every team will have that. I mean, every supporter is an amateur pundit of some sort, and they'll have their own opinion about, you know, it'll range from, you know, maybe the most rudimentary stuff like he's good or he's shit, basically, you know, to like, actually, he's quite useful if he's used in the right way. You know, we try and analyse it on the show. We try and sort of break down a player's strengths, weaknesses, and where we think they fit into the picture. Some people will say, oh, he's crap, you know, as simple as that. But everyone has a view on a player, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. And, you know, and you can ask any supporter of any team, you'll get the same kind of thing. But it's interesting to see the kind of parallels that they feel. Because I think, you know, we know that Kearney should be playing in the middle. We've always said that Kearney should play in the middle, and we're frustrated by him, you know, keep playing on the right. And suddenly, you know, he's in the middle. And, you know, I know it's only two games, it's not the whole season, but, you know, suddenly so many of the ills were wronged by, you know, Kearney being in the middle and Aluku not being in the middle. And, you know, I guess it could be a coincidence because, you know, with Callas back in the team, if we have an impregnable defence, then other teams, you know, are going to get frustrated and they have to look for plan Bs. And that can also work in your favour. It's not just always about, you know, putting five goals in and, you know, blowing the opposition away. Sometimes you have to grind them out, these results. And you have to stay tight. You know, I play tennis a lot, as you know, and sometimes I play a defensive game and I'll just hit the ball back every time I hit it back. I'll just wear the opposition down, whoever my opponent is, until they try and play a different shot because they're just bored of me hitting it back every time. And that's when I've got them, you know. That's sometimes where I, you know, because I know that I can always get the ball back. Wherever they hit the ball, I can always hit it back to them. So they have to try and do something special with it. And they put it out of play or they put it in the net. And it's the same, you know, it's an analogy. I mean, I'm no great tennis player really, but I can get the ball back well. And, and you know, if you can defend it, you know, sometimes, that's also a very good strength. If we can be strong at the back and teams that are looking to win, they have to start taking chances if they're not getting through. And that's when you can get them as well. So, you know, obviously the best thing to do is to go and score five goals every time and blow the opposition away. Wonderful. But it doesn't happen like that, you know. I wish it was, but, you know, even in our great promotion season 2000-2001, we had some games where we did score a lot of goals. You know, I can remember blowing Watford away, well, twice literally, and people like Barnsley as well, I think five goals against them. We did have some of those matches, but not every match was like that. Yeah. And sometimes we had to be patient, and, you know, teams, you know, were more and more cautious against us because we were a good team. They packed people behind the ball, they'd try and frustrate us and catch us out. But, you know, we were just as strong as well. And in the end, we wore them down. And this is about, you know, where we have to be tomorrow as well. We have to have both options available. The option to blow the other team away, but the option also to grind them down and get a result, even if things are not as easy as we'd like them to be. But, you know, we have a potentially a good defence now, a good defensive back five who can do a job. You know, touch wood, famous last words and everything, but who knows what's going to happen. I don't want to talk the defence up too much because...
I hear you, David.
It's asking for trouble with Fulham, isn't it? But
it is.
It's interesting to hear that, you know, we've maybe got to a position now. I doubt there's anyone, even Briefcase Ben wouldn't disagree with me now and say, yeah, we should actually switch Kearney back to the wing and everything. I think all the Fulham fans would now say that we seem to have the players playing in the right positions.
No, listen, I totally agree with you, David. I totally agree with you. And what's interesting, and then I just want to move on because I've got a couple of other things I want to share with you before I go any further into our preview. The one thing that I found interesting that he shared was he was talking about Glenn Leuvens, you know, talking about that center back pairing. You know, again, talking about the solid defense. Here we are. You know, you're talking about Thomas Kalas, how having him back is such a difference. Then talking about Tom Kearney playing out of position. And here he's talking about Barry Bannon playing out of position. I just, there are so many interesting parallels here that I'm glad that I can share this information. And again, thank you, Louis, for sharing this information because it really has been eye-opening and interesting to look at the parallels between the two clubs. And David, I'm gonna move on because I just want to get through this and then finish up with our own preview. I asked him for key players for Sheffield Wednesday, and here was his answer: Sam Hutchinson. He's been our standout performer in defense this term. Kieran Lee, the box-to-box midfielder, is a fan favorite due to his consistency throughout the season. He's added goals to his game and is one to watch out for. Gary Hooper, given the opportunity, Hooper will find the net on most occasions. He is our top scorer with 5 goals. Despite his critics, more often than not, he will find the goal given the chance. Okay. Then I asked for strengths and weaknesses. Here was his answers to that. Our biggest strength is the fact that we do have talented individuals who alone can win us a game. Take Hooper, Forshieri, Fletcher, for example. These three on their day are capable of finishing off a team. We have very good flair players as a team also. We also fight to the very last minute and have won a handful of games in stoppage time this season. Our biggest weakness is strength and power. If we come up against a team, a strong, overpowering team, we tend to struggle. For me, only Sam Hutchinson fits this mold, and he'll start as center back, although I prefer him as a defensive midfielder. Our fullbacks have also been poor lately by their standards, an area Fulham may be able to expose. And then I ask him, David, if you were Fulham head coach Slavisa Jokanović, what would be your strategy against Sheffield Wednesday? His answer: knowing our weaknesses, I would keep the ball out wide and expose our forever rotating wide players. Wednesday are pretty strong through the middle. If Jokanović can keep his defense tight, we struggle to finish off goal scoring opportunities. So this may be our downfall. If Fulham come out fighting and are first to every 50-50 ball, you should win. I mentioned earlier the Owls struggle against fierce opposition who like to get in their faces. David, I find this information very interesting from Louis. What do you take away from this?
Well, you know, he's given us a, you know, opened the door for us, said how we can win this game.
A blueprint.
And we can do this. We can get the ball out wide. Yep. We can be strong. You know, and of course the match is winnable. It's very winnable. We beat Huddersfield, who were higher placed, and we beat them convincingly. So why can't we do the same? So it gives me hope. My biggest fear is, you know, the Fulhamish situation that, you know, it's the hope that kills you sometimes, isn't it, when we get into these situations. And, you know, you have so much expectation is growing now that we can, you know, start doing things. And then we find the old banana skin and slip on it. But, you know, it's positive. I think, you know, from everything that he said and from the stats, that you know, the odds would be that it's going to be a tight game. And, you know, it's going to be a close game. Could be a draw. Could literally be a goal either way. That's what you would expect from that. But, you know, you would have probably said that with Huddersfield. Maybe you would have even put your money on a Huddersfield win. But, you know, it wasn't to me, was it? So, tomorrow is when it counts at the end of the day. I can talk about it and speculate, but I want Fulham to win this, and I hope Fulham can win this. But, you know, I think it's got all the makings of a tight game.
I agree, David. I totally agree. I think the teams are evenly matched. And, you know, even though Louis, you know, has been talking a little bit about some of their weaknesses, and they obviously have a good amount of talent there. And I do respect their manager, even though he's been making some changes this year. So they're going through some growing pains, just like Fulham are. That's why maybe we are both where we are right now on 24 points. I think we're both trying to take that next step. That's why this match tomorrow is fascinating, because you have two teams that are going to be fighting for it. So it should be very interesting. I'm going to end with Louis' prediction for the game. This is what he said, David, and then I'll have you dial back in, okay? Prediction on the day, 2-2. It's a game Wednesday cannot lose, despite Fulham being favorites, I'm sure. Put it this way, I would take a point now if I could. Okay, and I just want to thank Louis Shackshaft for sharing that information with us that I could read on Cottage. Louis, thank you very much if you do listen to the show. And he's a great guy. I've talked to him a few times. And he's a writer for Shoot, who covers Sheffield Wednesday. And David, I am now going to go to you. And let's start here, David. Who are your key players tomorrow for Fulham?
Well, I hope everyone's recovered from my appalling humor before I went off there. For me, tomorrow, I think, you know, it's throughout the spine of the team again, really. We need Kallas to be in the form that he's shown since he's back in the team. We need, in the middle, you know, the guys in the middle. It's a team thing, really. It's a, you know, Kallas to lead the defence, the guys in the middle to do what they do. You know, Martin to be, you know, what he does. You know, it might take a bit of magic. We might need to see someone like Alutu beat a few people down the wing, because we've already identified that perhaps this is a game we need to get down the wing. So maybe even Fredericks, you know, and Malone might be the key. I think, you know, with Fredericks and Malone, they're both great getting forward. There have been some question marks about final delivery, perhaps, maybe Fredericks especially, but Malone has certainly shown some good delivery. So I think, you know, he could really be a big key as well to that, because, you know, you can get people like that getting forward, that allows, you know, all the other players to be involved as well, if you know what I mean. It's not so much as, you know, we're getting more people forward. Okay, we don't really get caught in the break, but, you know, you get the defence forward as well, overlapping. You get a lot of people into the box. So I think, you know, perhaps you're looking at even, you know, someone like Scott Malone. Assuming he plays, of course, he could throw me a curveball tomorrow and play session on, but I doubt it somehow. I think this is, for me, would be my easiest team prediction for weeks, I would imagine. But, yeah, I think it's a team thing, but yeah, all of the individuals have to do their bit. You know, Malone has to do what he does. Kallas has to do his bit. Johansson has to keep chasing people down. Piazon does. Aluka has to chase people down and get the ball wide. Martin has to hold the play up. Kearney, you know, all these people doing these things allows Kearney to play, remember, as well. Kearney is key to this also. You know, and suddenly Kearney is not the focus of the team where everything has to come through him. You know, other people are creating space for him. Other people are creating nuisances, allowing him to be more useful to the team, allowing him to show his flair rather than being, you know, expected to work more. And he's not, you know, he's not in the team to be a worker, he's in the team to provide flair. You know, he doesn't have to do that work when other people are, you know, hassling around so much. It creates that space for him. So they're all really part of it. I mean, I've named most of the team there, but it's very hard to say one person is going to win this match for Fulham, really, because they all have their own parts to play.
Okay, very, very good, David. Let's now go to how to form need to win this match. I've shared a bunch of information. What would be your game plan if you were Slavisa? Would it be similar to what Louis was talking about? Just get the ball wide. What would be your game plan tomorrow?
Well, they've got to do what they've been doing the last two games. It's as simple as that, really. They really have, you know. And that was, you know, and a lot of that was getting the ball wide. Now, how many goals against Huddersfield came from wide positions? You know, the Brentford goals. I'm trying to remember what the Brentford goal was. The second one, I mean, was really a break, wasn't it? The Kearney goal, the Aluku one. Although he shot in the middle, I think it was wide play before that. We were getting in behind. You know, we got in behind them, didn't we? If I remember rightly. So the wire play is very, very important. You know, it's been one of the things I've moaned about, you know, our lack of width, our lack of penetration. You know, and it was my biggest disappointment with Odoi, if you remember, from earlier shows, that he wasn't getting forward and he wasn't getting behind them. And so, yeah, the wide play is really fundamental part of it because, you know, you've got the wide areas and you've got the middle. If you only play down the middles, you've just, you know, limited half your, you know, game plan, half your strategy. You know, they almost don't have to mark you if you're not going to go wide, if you haven't got people who can go wide. But this way they have. You can go either way. Drags the fullbacks out wide, leaves the centre-backs more exposed, especially when you've got, you know, hassling midfielders like, you know, Piazon and, you know, Hansen and Aluku, you know, charging down. So, you know, it really gives asks them some questions. So, yeah, why play most important, really, to use the width wherever you can.
Okay, very good there, David. It sounds like to me starting 11 is, you know, I'm assuming you would go with the starting 11 that he has used recently.
I guess I shouldn't assume.
But.
No. I think you have to assume that, really. Anyone would say, well, we've won the last two games to nil. we've got to keep the same team. Who would change this team? You know,
I agree.
We'd have to bring the men in the white coats out of their recent holiday to, you know, to change the team. We really would. I mean, what, unless there's an injury that he's, you know, been sly about and you know, keeping it under the radar, you know, why would you change a winning team? And it's not like, you know, they've played three matches in a week either. They've, you know, fought a break. They've got to be raring to go for it. And, I mean, it's tough on the guys who aren't in the starting 11. You know, the Michael Maddles, Odoi, who started the season, and they say people like Tunnicliffe and LVC who haven't featured, and Corley and Matt Smith hasn't been featured much recently either, and even the other ones, Yozabed and stuff. But, you know, who would change a winning team? Or why would you change a winning team? Can anyone... You know, can anyone listening, if someone tweet me and say, why would you change a winning team if there's no injuries or anything else? Obviously, tactical reasons, maybe, if you think there's a particular threat from the other team. But, you know, you've got to play your game first. Worry about, you know, worry about playing your game first and worry about the opposition second. You know, because let them worry about your game plan. Don't worry about their game plan so much, you know. If you're confident your game plan is superior, then fine. You know, don't worry about the opposition. And that's how it was when we won this league in 2000-2001, we didn't worry about the opposition. We just, you know, we blew most of them away. We were superior. Just be superior, you know. Best form of defence was attack that season, and if we can do the same this year, it will hold us in good stead. So, you know, I'd love to hear reasons for changing the team, but I don't think that he will change the team. I think he'd be mad to change the team.
I totally agree, David. All right, it's time for predictions to end the show. Let's start with the Cotter's Talk Twitter poll. I had 130 votes. Win, 78%. Draw, 18%. Loss, 4%. So obviously, the Foam supporters are pretty confident. On the Cotter's Talk Facebook page, we do have people that are predicting Sheffield Wednesday, which I completely understand, because this is a good side. Mr. Heinrich Gary Cooper is predicting a Sheffield Wednesday 1-0 victory. So we'll start off there. Colin Forknell, 2-0 to Fulham with Aluko and Martin. Matthew Vidiello, 1-0 loss. So we have a couple people predicting losses. Mike O'Connor, 2-1 to Fulham. Tom FFC Ward, 2-0 Fulham, 2-0 against Sheffield Wednesday. Guy Rofe, 2-0 to Fulham. Joe Smythe, 1-0, Fulham onward. Ben Reed, briefcase Ben. You ready, David? 2-0 to Fulham. Dean Pill, 2-0 to Fulham. Colm Bugler, 1-1. Andy Newland, 4-1 to Fulham. Chris Davidson, I'll go with a popular vote, 2-0. The defense is looking good now. George Kenton, 3-1 to Fulham. Phil Harper, close call, 1-0 to Fulham. Simon Haneed, 2-2. Gags Owen, 2-0 to Fulham. Mia Cutler, 2-1 to Fulham. Steve Lewis, 3-1 to Fulham. Richard Bamber, 3-0 to Fulham. Dan Layton, 3-1 to Fulham. Brendan Morris, 2-1 to Fulham. Sarah Waity. Just a win. There's a golden for you, David. Let's see. Roger Pink, if we play the way we did in the last two games, at least 2-0 to Fulham. If we play like we did in September, October, I'll be going home at halftime. Okay, Stephen O'Keefe, 2-1 to Fulham. Adam Hicks, 2-2. Okay, David, those are all the predictions from the Fulham supporters. Give me your prediction.
I want to be boring and sit on the fence and say a draw and, like, you know, like our friend Mr. Snapchat or whatever he was called, you know, two all or something. You know, it sounds like it could easily be a two all game, but, you know, can I just for once say yes, we will win and we will actually win? Because, you know, I've gotten bored of saying, oh well, actually we'll lose, and then when we win, I'm pleased, because I'm just frightened of saying we'll win and we'll lose. But this is a game we can win, and I think, you know, my head is saying we can win it 2-1, we can grind it out, something like that. My heart is saying, oh, we can actually go out and do it better, that we can destroy them, you know. But I don't think Lightning will strike twice. People will be expecting that. People will be hoping that. And, you know, Sheffield Wednesday will hopefully have a game plan, you know, for themselves to try and counter that, to make it a much more, you know, balanced game. Because I think, you know, the crowd will almost now, we'll just be hoping that they can come out and do like they did against Huddersfield. And if we, you know, if we get off to a good start, who knows? But, you know, let's stick with 2-1 and keep our feet on the ground. And then, you know, if it's better than that, we can be very happy. But at the end of the day, a 2-1 win would still be very welcome.
David, doesn't happen often, but I'm going with you with this prediction. I'm going 2-1 to Fulham. But I can totally understand why Louis went 2-2. Louis Shakshaw from Shute, because these are two evenly matched teams, two good managers too. I respect their manager. So these are two teams at pretty much the same place right now in the season, and pretty much, you know, trying to figure out which direction they're going to go. So this is a fascinating match, but I think Fulham are going to edge it, and I'm going to say 2-1 to Fulham, and I'm going to say a brace from Chris Martin. So I'm going to say Chris Martin's going to score a couple goals. All right, David, final thoughts before we go.
I didn't realize you were putting the hex on other people now. It was almost a Goldman free show. You had a Goldman and a half, I think, this time, which is quite... you know, quite low stats. We have to see what Calvin Klein thinks of that in his stats roundup, whether how many Goldmans are allowable to be a good co-host or not. I mean, and you know, I'm sure I've done them as well, so it's fine. But yeah, I know I've enjoyed very much being back and being silly as usual. I haven't had a chance to tell my crap jokes for weeks, really. So thank you for giving me the platform to do that. And let's fingers crossed. Tomorrow is going to be, you know, something between what I predicted and what happened, you know, against Huddersfield.
Okay, very good there, David. My final thoughts basically just involve the match tomorrow. Just, you know, I look forward to listening to the match. I wish this match was on television. It's not, but I will be listening to it. I look forward to it. It's been a long international break, David, and I'm just looking forward to football being back tomorrow at Craven Cottage. Couldn't be at a better place. I just wish I was there with you. And that's my final thought. I wish I was going to be there tomorrow, but I'm not going to be there, but that's okay. All right, David, time to wrap up this great show. You were fantastic. Great show. But we need to wrap it up. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.